crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
And now, the end is near. And so, I was going to say I face the final curtain, but I don't.
You might do after that intro.
Welcome to this week's House of Rugby, and it's a fairly emotional one this week, I think it's fair to say. Brought to you by Joe, together with our friends at Guinness. It's a table for two, a saucer of milk, and it's the Hask and I, with a bit of reflection. Because... Tell the nice people.
I'm retiring at the end of the season. I think my last game of rugby has come upon me. Maybe if I can get a Barbarians game, because I've never ever done that, it might be quite nice. But
let's start the campaign here.
I can't do it anymore. I'm not going to just can't. You know, I can't play to the level I wanted to play at. I can't train as much as I wanted to, and I can't perform as much as I wanted to. And I always said that when the door to England was closed and when I couldn't perform anymore, I would hang up my boots and try and do something else with my life.
You've got one or two options. I'm not worried about you in the future. But just quickly, so in the interest of transparency, we're recording this on the Friday, and today Northampton came to you and said, can you do a job this weekend? And you were like, I got one more in me. Happened?
Yeah, unfortunately not. So I'm retiring because I was always going to try to retire after the World Cup. I think ideally having won it, I would have booked deals, action figures, everything else was already planned. I had to call up the warehouse, burn it all, pulp it, a bit like Alan Partridge,
the Grand Slam T-shirts.
All gone,
whatever it was.
I've had so many sort of false starts. Obviously, there's a few weeks left of the season. I'm trying to, to get back onto the field every day. And it's really frustrating because it's like going into purgatory. I think Chloe summed it up. I'm going to a club that I love with people that I love to play a game that I love that I can't do. Yeah. And every day, because of the nature of my injury with my toe, it some days it has good days, sometimes it has bad days. So I come in and I'm like, oh my God, actually, I can do this. And then I can't. And then suddenly it won't hurt in the evenings. You'll be like, oh, I could have played. And it's just very frustrating. So there's been a few opportunities where there's been, guys have either had to drop out, and I've tried anaesthetic in it. And I thought, right, I'll try one more thing if I can go and do it. And even that doesn't work. And I just know that if I tried to force it, I wouldn't be able to perform. And, we're playing knockout rugby at the moment at Saints. And I think for my own personal kind of pride, it would be terrible to go out into the field and not to be able to perform and have to call it a day, really. So it's come a lot sooner than I imagined. I genuinely feel like I'm 18, 19, that I've just done some time at WASC, that I've made my debut against Connacht when I was still at school, 17, and that the future's bright. I don't feel like I'm 34. I don't feel like I've done any of the stuff, really, that I wanted to kind of complete in rugby. And
seriously, you don't feel you've done any of the things you wanted to complete in rugby?
I'm being like self-indulgent. Like, I obviously have had an amazing career, but I don't feel like I want to stop. I still feel as competitive as ever. And I was thinking what we would talk about on tonight's show, and it's really interesting because I 100% every interview I've ever done with people is all about, you're perceived as this, but you're not actually this, you're a bit of a dick, but, actually you're really hardworking. And I've created this persona that I enjoy, that is me, that I've put in front of everybody, and I divide opinion. I'm 100% like Marmite. But it's normally the people who don't like me are people who've never met me or worked with me. And actually my professional life has been completely different to the reality that you've seen on social media. I spent, I would say 99% of my career, driving backwards and forwards to see people, to do extra training, to improve myself, whether that's, I remember when I was injured with a knee injury, I was waking up at 4 in the morning to go and train at 5 in the morning with a guy called Phil Learney in London, to then turn up to WASPs to train to get better. They didn't know that I was doing that because I wanted to be the best I could be. When I was at Stade Français, I used to go back once a week on the Eurostar to see a guy called Kevin Lidlow, an unbelievable physio who I saw from 17 to the other day, to get the best physio. You know, I was doing boxing, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, seeing nutritionists, Matt Lovell, you know, Phil Learney, working with a guy called Travis Allen, doing all these kind of things with these people outside of hours, and spending all my own money to get the best out of my career. And that's not sexy. That's not what you tell people, but it's what I've done. And, you know, it's not going on holiday and staying around and training. Or if I do go on holiday, it's finding running tracks in the middle of like remote areas to do fitness sessions, and, you know, going out on the piss with my best mate, Paul Doran Jones, and then waking up next morning and doing a fitness session and throwing up and, you know, committing everything I could possibly do that, and buying, you know, I had like a tackle bag at home, and I had stuff, you know, I had cones, I was doing running up and down like farmers' fields or whatever it was, just to try to get fit to do my job. And that's all coming to an end, and it's very weird, because people do say to me, oh look, you've done a lot of stuff outside rugby, and I genuinely have thrown my life into everything I've done.
Yeah.
So I you know, I wanted to be a professional rugby player when opportunities arose. When I was young, I didn't want to be, but when I got the opportunity, I deferred my university entrance, and I said, I'm going to give it a go for a year. And 20 years later, I'm still doing what I love, and I've played with amazing players, and I have achieved a lot. I think there's things, when you're like a perfectionist like I am, you don't ever sit back. I've never celebrated anything. I think people say that I'm arrogant. I have an arrogance about me, but I've never celebrated. That's what I regret. I never celebrated enough the big moments. I just let it pass because I was thinking, how can I improve next? What can I go and do? When's the next training? And you know, that's coming to an end. And that's really, really bizarre for me, very sad for me. Like I told the guys that... told the guys at Saints this the other day, and I broke down like a little bitch and cried. I didn't feel emotional.
What did you say?
I just said to everyone, look, you know, don't, because you made me go again, is that I basically said that, you know, I've had an amazing career, and that I've been all around the world, and I've done everything I wanted to do, and I finished off at a great club, Northampton, and I've enjoyed every day of it. I've loved it. I've laughed every day, and I've tried my ass off to get fit, and I only managed to play five games, which I've never done, you know, in a season. Every season, you know, I remember at Stavron Say, I was playing 40 games a year. You know, yeah. Wasso, I played, you know, a load. And Saints, I haven't done that. And you know, when I signed for Saints, you know, so many people were like, you know, really positive about it and excited about it. You know, I took a lot of criticism from kind of some diehard Saints fans, you know, not knowing that I'd taken the biggest pay cut of all time, yeah, just to stay in the country, to come to the club. You know,
you said you were earning more as an academy kid.
Yeah,
Wasps,
yeah, yeah.
Wasps,
I'm on the same money I'm on now that I was when I was, you know, 20. And it's not about that. It was about me staying in the country to fight my way into a great Saints team, to play with Courtney, Woody, you know, Dylan Hartley, all the boys, you know, to work with Lewis Lidlam, to play with Heinrich Rousseau, and obviously signing Dan Bigger, to go on to force my way back into England to finish. And, you know, I may have played my last ever rugby game. And I said to the guys, like, I didn't want to, and I ended up breaking down. And Chloe, I said in the media, I said, fucking hell, I didn't even cry on my wedding day. And I text Chloe, and she wrote back going, she called me not something nice as a bellend, but I'll say it was that you didn't even cry on your wedding day. So we were on the right, the right path. But, yeah. And people have said to me, oh, look, you know, you've got lots of stuff going on outside of rugby, but there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee to any of it, and I've always maximised all of it, and it's caused me to live my life like I think rugby players should live their lives, which is to indulge in things outside of their sport. Man, I take some criticism. Fuck me, you know. I mean, I've been stopped in you know, in pubs and in public by people going, "Oh, I don't think you should have done that. You shouldn't have done that." You know, when I left WAS all those time ago, because they were trying to mug me off on a contract, and you know, it took me 2 years to get to a point where I was just about happy, and then they came in and said, "Oh, actually, we're not going to do that." And I went to Stafford and say, I was like, "What an opportunity to go to play in Paris." And the kind of work stuff off the field, you know, now actively the RPA and people encourage players to have interests, but yeah. I started doing that. You know, I was there when Matt Hampson broke his neck, and I was like, if that doesn't tell you how finite fucking rugby is. And I can't complain, because I then look at myself and I go, look at Tom Rees, who was, you know, arguably probably one of the best sevens this country's produced, and he didn't get a chance as I've had. Guys fall by the wayside, way better players than me, haven't had the opportunity to play for England. And I can't be too sad and down, but it's only relative to you and your own world. So, you know, as a perfectionist and as someone, you know, I'd love to have gone to finish in a World Cup. I want that moment, but you don't get it. You know, you don't get the Rich McCaw moments to finish as you would want. So I've got to do that, and I've got to find a new job, find a new career. And for all those people who say, oh, you should have spent more time on rugby, you should have done this, and if you hadn't done all the media and you're a media whore and everything else, I'm like, fuck me. You know, the postman, the milkman, the fucking electricity board don't take goodwill and rugby caps and memorabilia as payment. I mean, some of them might take a bit of memorabilia, but they don't take that. And you've got to find a job. And you know, I've earned some good money in my time, and I haven't. You know, I went to the Highlanders for 20,000 Kiwi. It fucking cost me more to play for them, but people don't talk about that. People don't know that, because I went there for the love of the game. I went there because I wanted to play with, you know, Tamati Ellison and Aaron Smith and play for the Super 15 and do it. And, you know, but I had other good paydays. I had other stuff, but I still got to work. And you know, it's exciting because there are new adventures. But at the moment, I'm in this weird, really weird situation.
You will be all right. Trust me. I know it feels like the void is, you'll be just fine. I know your dad's had a very big impact in your career. Have you put your head on his shoulder and sort of... Have you had a moment with him and a hug and a...
I haven't, because they don't live... You're trying to make me cry.
I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to explore. I've never done an interview with anyone in the moment of their retirement. And we have been talking about it for a while. It's not a huge surprise. And you've sort of intimated that you're quite frightened about it. And genuinely, you're going to be absolutely fine. But I'm just interested as to, you know, what the raw emotions of this kind of experience is like for someone who has loved it as much.
So I'm very lucky that I've got an amazing wife who I think if I'd been with, you know, I don't think being with any other partner, she would have had the understanding and the compassion. You know, she's kind of got a heart the size of a minibus, so she fully gets it, which is great. And it is odd because I'm not, you know, even in my saddest time, I'm really quite a chipper kind of guy. I don't really walk around. I talk about problems. Like people ask me, you know, people always ask things and I tell them the truth. You know, everyone goes, how are you? I go, actually, I'm a bit shit. Yeah. People look at you because everyone says they're okay.
Because you've done that with me a few times. And I, when we start the show, and I'm a bit like, really?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that you... I just thought you bounced around like a Labrador puppy the whole time.
I do like this. Yeah, like that commentator Eddie Butler said, you know, I am like some fucking weird dog, but I am, because I like making people laugh.
Yeah,
I like enjoying life. I think I genuinely believe, and I know we've touched on religion in other shows.
Let's not.
But you only get one chance. I think you get one chance at life, and that's it. I don't think there's any dress rehearsals, and I think that, as I said about the Matt Hampson thing, who for me is a constant daily inspiration for what he's achieved in the face of, like, you know, a terrible injury, that you only get one chance to really live your life. And I want to maximise it. And I wanted to be, in every team I went to, the one guy in the room with all the stories who had done the stuff that other people wouldn't have done or whatever, but to have that story. And I spoke to my parents, and I think my mum's glad.
Really?
Yeah. She you know, I think... But what you don't realise as well, especially my parents, they've made their whole life about me and my rugby, you know, from the very early age of genuinely drive, you know, and every player says this, you know, driving you around to trials and to doing everything. But my parents were incredible at that whole thing, supporting and fighting and for me and you know, and really kind of helping me and guiding me and trying to do everything. And sometimes, you know, my dad always talks about trying to add value, but I've told him to sometimes. Sometimes you're not adding value. They're literally not going to offer me another contract now if you don't gnaw them up. But no, they've been amazing. Like, I couldn't wish for better parents, more supportive parents. I think if I'd done anything, they would have supported me. But they have been amazing, and they, you know, came to every single game. My dad came to every single school game I ever played.
Yeah,
like that's amazing. Like, you know, when you're playing Wednesday, you know, Saturday, so did my mum. You know, he would come to every away game. And they just had unbelievable compassion. He was always on the sideline, you know, whether he's never been on time in his life. So he'd always turn up halfway through the game, but he would turn up. Yeah. And I think that's so important as a parent, if you could able to do that, to show that support and nurture it. My mum was exactly the same. And, you know, I remember when I was trying to get in shape with this thing, when I was driving into London and I was seeing seeing Phil Learney, you know, I was eating this ridiculous diet, which was like six meals a day of like... protein, carbohydrates and fats, and they were making broil, you know, and I came down for breakfast and it was a conveyor belt system. My mum was boiling chicken, my dad was cooking salmon on the grill, they were boiling potato, and they were, as I was eating breakfast, they were stacking it. And I was, I don't know, I was 26, 27 at the time. I'd moved back, because I never got to sign long enough at a club. I only ever did 2-year contracts. I never got offered a long contract. You know, bizarrely, every deal I ever had at Wasp before was offer of a pay cut every time. It was bizarre. Like, all the way through my career, it was never, no one ever came to me and Evan said, "Joe, thanks so much for everything you've done. Well, we're going to extend your contract." It was a battle. Yeah. So I never knew anything. So I lived at home for a large part, and I lived in London, and I lived all over the place. Because I never knew where I was going to be.
Yeah.
So no point buying a house in central London or buying a place if you're going to end up at home. So my parent, you know, my mum doing my laundry, and my dad, I think, making a conveyor belt, and I'd leave with a Jane Fonda cool box. And I look back at that now, and I just think the buy-in from them. And they, you know, they came to every single Wasp game. They got a box at Wasp in first time round, and they would be there, you know, without fail. And, you know, yeah, I spoke to them, but I think...
Are they quite matter of fact with you, or are they emotional for you, or are they?
I think they're proud of you. I think they're proud. I think they're unbelievably proud of me. But I think my dad, I think, like any dad, it's sometimes hard to say, you know, to say what you're thinking. Yeah. But I think he's occupied at the moment. We've obviously got this gym we've opened in Bath, and he's kind of occupied with that. But I think they've become kind of almost rugby widows now, because they're used to every week turning up to, you know, to the Wasp ground, to the Saints ground. And they've absolutely loved being at Saints. You know, I've loved it. I had no idea, other than every time you played Northampton, they were super physical, they were really intense, and they used to beat us all the time at Wasp. And then I went there and I found this unbelievable history of a club with, you know, legendary war heroes that had played for them, with diehard fans that were so you know, incredibly passionate and supportive, and welcomed my parents. You know, that was the key thing. You know, as a player, you've got to focus on your game, and people were texting you for tickets and doing everything else. And the one thing I wanted them to do, and they just looked after them, and they loved it. And they were, and like Phil Pass, the England physio, but, you know, used to be obviously a legendary Saint. And there's, you know, Piggy Powell there, and there's all these kind of guys that still go around, and fans come and watch training. Like, I've never had that in my life. So I've been really welcomed by Saints, and I'm disappointed because, as I said, some people didn't want me to come there, that, you know, they didn't see it as a good signing, and obviously shared that with you, as arseholes do in this world. And I'm disappointed. I think I couldn't do more. Like, I remember I probably shouldn't be telling you this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm retiring. Fuck it, what they're going to do. A super drunk guy, like an alcoholic, during pre-season, must have walked off the street and come into the stadium while we were having a meeting. And he was like a blue bottle trapped at a window. He was like walking around with a can of like lagers, and he was like walking around, and he couldn't. He was like walking up and down the stadium, sitting, you know, drinking. He was shit faced. And I thought, well, I'll just go over and I'll just try and help him, like show him where the exit was, because he was honestly couldn't work it out. And I remember walking over to him and I said, "So, hello, sir, sorry, can I help you? Do you want me to show you where to get out?" And he turned around and he said to me, he's like, "Hi," like steaming. He's like, "I know you, I know you." And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, you're, you know, last chance. Yeah, last chance to play for England. It's not going to happen, you shit, you fucking shit." And started abusing me. And it was the most bizarre situation, because he obviously was complimentous enough to know that he couldn't name me, but he knew, and it was honestly like a premonition to what has actually happened. He's like, "You never play, you never do this." So I thought, should I just fill him in while no one's looking? But I thought it was a bit tight. So
a good Samaritan in me.
And I showed him out, and he abused me the whole way. You know, calling me everything under the sun and telling me how shit I was, and I was never going to play, and it was never going to work out. And then he disappeared, and then it's unfortunately worked out. So
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, I know
it's not. I'm not saying that he's a period, but
I wouldn't go to him again anytime soon.
No, I wasn't looking for advice. It was just, I have always done things in my career to a lot of times to prove people wrong.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of stupid stuff to be able to be the one that tells the story.
Yeah,
because I'd love telling a story, getting all the lads around having a coffee, and I've also done a lot of stuff to prove a lot of people wrong. Like, I've got a tattoo on me that says "The best revenge is living well," and that's how I've lived my life. To a full extent. So, you know, I don't, he didn't have any effect on me. It was just very funny that I went and do a good deed and the bloke abused me and he turned out to be right. And I'm like, even a drunk guy got it right. So it's a bit annoying.
A stop clock is right once an hour, isn't it? You mentioned about the England thing and now that's gone. You went to see Eddie Jones, didn't you?
Yeah, it was really important for me to speak to Eddie because, you know, I said at the start about every media interview is always like, were you misunderstood? Are you, you know, this different person? And the fact of the matter is, and it sounds really arrogant, I don't mean it like that, but if I'd been a terrible person, I wouldn't have been able to play at the clubs. And I wouldn't, you know, I've had some pretty tough coaches.
Yeah.
Warren Gatland, Sean Edwards, Jamie Joseph, Ewan McKenzie, Chris Boyd, Di Young, Eddie Jones, Michael Checker. You know, it's
fairly uncompromising bunch.
Yeah. So if I'd been, you know, disruptive, non-professional, I've asked, they wouldn't have tolerated it. But I've always ended up in great relationship with all of them, and always been well. Martin Johnson, you know, everyone always thought we never got on. I told you that I once said to him, he asked me what I was doing on a day off, and I said to him, I'm off to go and get my action figures like moulded and made. And he genuinely looked at me and he believed it. And he went, really? I was like, no, I haven't.
I'll be doing extras.
Yeah, so he was never quite sure that. But he, you know, him and I got on, you know, with different kind of personalities. John Wells, Graham Rowntree, all these kind of great coaches that I've had in my time. I got on with all of them and they wouldn't have tolerated it. But there is kind of that weird belief. But with Eddie, you know, out of all the coaches, he gave me an opportunity and backed me.
Yeah.
He didn't want me to be anybody else. He didn't want me to shut up. He didn't want to do anything. He backed me. He, like, you know, when Di Young gave me the captaincy at Wasps, you know, it would have been simpler to give it to someone that may be less controversial, maybe someone who's a yes man, a bit of a vanilla thriller, as I call them. But Eddie just backed me. And he got the best out of me. The best rugby I ever played in my life was for England under him. And he believed in me. He created an environment that was so fun. That I laughed every time that he was, and he helped. He wanted to make me a better player. He actively helped me. Would come up to me and walk around, and I wanted to meet him, which I did. And I sat down and just said, "Look, mate, I can't. Even though you weren't going to obviously pick me, I'm not stupid. I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. And you know, you've got some great players, but thank you so much. Thank you. I can't thank you. I never thought, you know, I'd win a Grand Slam. I failed three times before." Never thought I'd ever get a man of a series, and I never thought I'd play as many times as I did for England. I obviously want more. Yeah. Like, I'm not satisfied. Like, you know, 78, 77 caps, whatever it is great, but I wanted 100. I want, you know, I want that. I wanted that 80. I wanted 80. I'll take that. I'll take one more time in that shirt. But, you know, my last game for England was against Ireland. You know, we lost the Grand Slam, but I thought I played some great rugby that day. I thought I did really well. And for someone that wasn't involved at the start, you know, I got in and I did a job, and I'll save it every single moment. And he really, for all the criticism and everything else that people have levelled against him, and you know, when England lost those few games, honestly, the environment he created is the blueprint for an environment. I know some people find it too hard. I know some people feel it intense, but honestly, lads would sit around and go, "We want to be here." Like, I wanted to be there, and sometimes that's not been the case. I always want to play for England, but you just know that training's not going to be the right way as it should be. Fucking think you're going to be doing stuff you just shouldn't be doing. Mm. You know, the training's not going to help you get a result. And Eddie changed that, and he backed me, and I wanted to look him in the eye and just say, thank you so much for that. And if I can help, let me know. If I can do anything, let me know. And he was brilliant, you know. And that was it, really. And that was sad. I think every step that I've taken, like doing this, I wanted to do it with you, not because, you know, about House Rugby, but, you know, you've been there since the very start of my kind of career. And I wanted to say it honestly and openly, because, you know, I'll do some media, but no one ever writes it as you want it to write.
True.
No one ever says it how you want to say it, and everyone has their own opinion. So I kind of wanted to put it in my own words.
I want to pick up on your career in a moment and talk some of the highs and some of the lows, et cetera. But I do obviously just have to dive in at this point to say you are listening to House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe Together with Guinness, with me, Alex Payne, alongside James Haskell, former rugby player, future star of Broadway, God knows what. Before we continue talking about your big decision, here's Chris Lloyd with news of something else that you might like from Joe.
Cheers, Alex. I'm Chris Lloyd. This is Carl Frampton eating his way slowly towards the middleweight division. We're going to be here every Thursday talking about the big issues in boxing, getting stuck in with special guests, behind-the-scenes interviews, and, of course, snacks as well. Tune in every Thursday, podcast and on YouTube.
Thank you, Chris. What has been really interesting about this is your levels, how you sort of, you sound like you're very dissatisfied with what you've achieved, and yet you're also very proud of how much effort you've put in. And I just sort of wonder, I wonder whether people have spoken to you and sort of said, stop. Just look at what's on the paper and look at what you've achieved. And if you'd been offered that as a 17-year-old spotty kid, you know, a Lions tourist, a Grand Slam, European Cup, Premiership Winners Medal, et cetera, et cetera. You've played in all the major competitions around the world. You've had a phenomenal run of it. You've got a massive following. I wonder whether actually you're slightly sort of hard. I mean, I know you are hard on yourself, but I would love for someone to say, wake up and smell the coffee.
Yeah. Chloe, you know, Chloe says that. The interesting thing is that I said after 2015 World Cup that went really well, I said that, you know, I thought I was never going to play for England again. And then to get the call from Eddie early on to say that he has a job for me to do and that's what he wants me to do and for me to genuinely play the best rugby. And it was amazing because I've always struggled throughout my career. I mean, I listed all the things I used to do, but one of the biggest things is psychology. You know, like I saw a lady called Dr. Jill Owen. And I genuinely believe if I hadn't seen her and continued to see her, that I would never have made it through. I've always had such a big level of self-doubt around rugby.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
I know, for all the chat, you know, I can stand up in front of 2,000 people and speak. I can do whatever, you know, and do an after dinner. I can do everything else like that. And you know, and as Chloe said, you know, you've got arrogance in all the wrong place. You know, you should have had
she
it.
She knows you well.
She does.
She knows you
and,
well.
And you know, I spent time with Jill. You know, recently I did a lot of kind of like hypnotherapy stuff to help improve the game when I was going through a really bad time. Because, you know, obviously, you know, when I got left out of the autumn, when Eddie came, you know, famously came up to my house and was concerned that I was going to bury him with my JCB. When he said, "Look, you know, I'm not going to pick you, and this might be kind of the end of it." That was bad, you know. And then when I did my toe injury, I've been in pain every day since, you know, and if it wasn't for Under Armour, it's genuinely not branding. They sent me a pair of NFL boots, and if it wasn't for them, I would have retired after that. I was getting to the end of the time with WOS, and I couldn't run and I couldn't do it, and it made a massive difference, and it bought me two more years, which was huge for me. And it was, you know, it was hard, and I do appreciate it, and people do remind me. I just think it's, for me, it's never been about the outcome. I know the winning's important, you enjoy it, but it's always just been about the effort.
Yeah,
and that's bad because it's always been about the next thing. It's never been sit and reflect, which is the frustrating thing. You know, like I didn't celebrate the bits I should have celebrated.
I'm amazed about that.
I mean,
as the character that you portray, I would imagine that you were king of the swingers when it came to celebrating.
No, listen, but a lot of time I didn't, you know, a lot of time I spent time not drinking, not doing that.
I don't necessarily mean it like that, but I'm just amazed that you don't bookmark it as you go.
That mindset, I didn't. I was always thinking, you know, and no coach ever says the job's done. So no one ever says, oh, that was a great game, you know, you played well, but you never, there's always something to improve on. And I honestly, like, you know, it drives Chloe mad. Like, I don't get excited. Say, for example, I've got a real nice holiday or something come up or an event. I don't get excited about it because it's never get too excited, never get too down. It was always the next job. And that's the one thing that I'm going to be annoyed about, is because there's so many nights that I should have gone out on the piss to celebrate what we'd done, but I didn't. I stayed in and I did what you should do. And I you know, I was next day I was watching footage of the game, and I was making scribbling notes or on the phone to Jajil or you know, speaking to Elliot Rowe, this hypnotherapist, trying to improve, trying to work on it, trying to keep my demons at bay, like my self doubt. I don't regret anything about my career, except I wish I'd backed myself more. And I know for people who think I've walked around backing myself all the time, you're like, could you have backed yourself anymore? In a solely a rugby context.
That's amazing.
Because I spent when I came back from the Highlanders to WOS, there was like a big, where my game had almost changed a little bit. I was a bit like tentative to carry the ball. I was a bit, you know, other things. It took my mate Travis to sit me down and go through his footage. And I'm thinking, who the fuck are you, ball Kiwi fucking, you know, telling me how to play rugby? But he's like, you know, like most Kiwis, rugby mad and knew what he was talking about. And he sat down, we went through my game, and I had to realise to myself that I was playing within myself again. And I hadn't realised it. Like, I just was shying away from doing what I wanted to do, and I wasn't coming off the field like satisfied. And that's the one thing you can do is come off the field going, you know what, I tried everything. If I wanted to do my one kick in a game, I chipped the fullback against Purple and scored. Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. Well worth a YouTube.
It is on YouTube.
Stade Francais, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that, you know, that if you want to do that, if you want to try the out the back door offload, if you want to do whatever it is that you need to go for it. You need to back yourself and you need to enjoy it. And that's why I always looked at people like Billy V or like Nathan Hughes, people in my, who just don't appear on the surface to concern, worry. Everyone has their demons, but they look at it, they play with such freedom.
What are you proudest of? Game, trophy, medal, performance?
I'm really proud of being part of that Heineken Cup win.
Yeah.
Because
you were a young kid there.
Yeah, they don't grow on trees, Heineken Cup. And I was spoiled early on with Big Lowell and the, you know, I think we played, what was it, all that, my period of time, there were 12 finals, 12 wins or whatever it was. Yeah. To get the Premiership, you know, to play in a back row with me, Reese and Lawrence.
Yeah.
Was awesome to win that Premiership.
The governor and his two pups.
Yeah, yeah. To, you know, that Heineken Cup's stressful because I made that 80-metre break and I fell 5 metres short of the line, and it haunts me today. Like,
you said that before.
I know. I'm like, it rattles me. Things are weird, things like that rattles
One
me.
One day in your dreams, you'll score it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. We got a penalty off it, so it wasn't wasted, but it really fucks me off if I didn't score, because that would have been champagne, but now it's just...
That would have been in front of the showreel.
Yeah, and then that was when John Wells actually... after that game, he said, I watched it. I thought, he'd gone into that game before telling me that the reason I wasn't going to South Africa at all was that he thought I was all flash and no bash. And ultimately, my career ended up being all about bash and minimum flash. So it was quite funny. But so that moment, I think winning the Grand Slam. Do you know what? Winning my 50th, albeit in we've joked about that, you know, Chris Robshaw making me sing, and we obviously lost the Grand Slam. I think winning my 50th, because no one can take that away from you ever, but the Grand Slam, you know, the relief of winning that and being part of that and actually going down. And people don't appreciate the rubber, how hard it is to win those things and to get a Grand Slam and to do it. And it's an amazing achievement, and credit to Wales. You know, they've done it, you know, three times or whatever it is. And for England, we'd won Six Nations, but we'd won and lost the final game or you know, we'd lost Grand Slam deciders and won. But to actually do it in France... it was amazing. And then, you know, the tour of Australia was amazing, because do you know what it was? After the first game, everyone was so nice.
Really?
Yeah, after the first game we won and I got man of the match and we did it. It was the fact that everybody was nice. Like, nobody had a bad word to say. And there's normally like, you know, you get four or five people tell you to retire after you've played or something else. But everybody, even Stuart Barnes, was unbelievably nice to me. Like, it was a very nice thing and but I didn't celebrate those moments, and I should have done, because they were probably my best ever in an England shirt. But they gave me man of the series, and Dills and the lads made me a trophy, which involved taking, I don't know, like a cake stand and something else, and putting a spike through one of my trainers really helpfully, and writing on the side of it, man of the series. But they wanted to give it to me, but also wanted to fuck my shoes up. So it was a double-edged sword again. But it was nice that they did that. And
where's the cake stand with the spike?
I wanted to take it back. I took the shoe back with the...
Can't
with
take
the,
it on his hand luggage.
Yeah, you can't take on a giant cake stand with a spike through the middle of it.
What did you put in your cornflakes in Australia? Because that, I mean, that was the best rugby you ever played in terms of a sort of a bystander's view.
Yeah,
you were phenomenal.
Do you know what it was? I had a conversation with my mate Travis before, and he said to me, look, you know, you're always thinking about setting yourself targets, doing everything else like that, but the best rugby players in the world, your George Smiths, your Pococks, you know, they anticipate, they react, and they execute. They don't overthink. They don't do that. They go out and play, and you've got to back yourself. You've done the experience. What, you know, you've got the physicality, you've got the experience, you've got everything. And all I did was just went out and played in the moment. I didn't overthink it. And I just
was right. I remember you smashed Pocock right from
the
start.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sort of filled your sails, and you never really slowed up from there.
And then, weird enough, you know, I enjoyed the second game more, just because we had to do so many tackles. You know, so many tackles. Ironically, I stopped Israel Folau scoring a try. But there was just some big moments, and it because the first game wasn't the end of the series. You know, the second game was important, and we all went off into the change room. It was really positive. But my mind was on my toe. You know, it was like sticking up in a weird way. I thought a boot stud had come through my boot, so I changed boots, and then I realised, no, it wasn't the stud, it was just, I'd ruptured everything in my toe. And honestly, the pain, I've had pain in it every day since. And I genuinely said, I asked for size 13s. My mate Mike Dodds from Under Armour sent me pair of 12 and a half by mistake, and I put them on and I ran around like a kid. And Eddie was like, mate, you're running around like an 18-year-old. And I reckon that
small shoes fixed it.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It was like the best feeling in the world. The best feeling of like, I'm going to be done. Like, oh my God, I can do this. And I got 2 more years out of it. And I was like trying to play with anaesthetic in my toe. And then I was like, this is no good. Play with the boots. And I was like, I'm back. And I got 2 more years and I wanted to go to St. And weird enough, my toe was absolutely fine coming into the season. I had to have ankle surgery on my other leg because of whatever reason. And my toe went and it just won't calm down. And I just think now's the time to call it.
I'm amazed you haven't said the Lions. Because from a layman's perspective, you know, for everything that you've achieved with Wasps, Northampton and travelling around the world and England, the Lions moves you from a sort of... And all fans will say it moves you from, you know, amazing talented player into something that's actually very special.
Do you know why I'm not going to say it?
Because?
Because I didn't play the test side.
Yeah, but there's real credit in being a Lion. There are amazing tourists who have had instrumental roles who haven't featured in the...
No, and look, that's
Alan
that's,
Bateman. I mean, Alan Bateman played in the third test in 97, but is considered a great Lion because he pushed those in front of him. He was absolutely instrumental to the midweek success that kept the tour on track.
That's the logic, but that's just my perfectionist thing. Like I, you know, the Lions tour for me was the best tour I've ever done with anyone. We talked about it on shows before. I made friends for life. I had more fun, and you know, I didn't watch the Lions DVD, but Chloe, my world's biggest fan, did, and. Apparently, you know, 5 or 6 players listed me as someone they didn't think they were going to get on with.
Yes,
but
probably more than that.
But
actually.
Loved it. Yeah. And you know, I wanted that midweek team to be amazing. But I want, you know, I went on to it as a.
But you went on late.
Yeah.
And you had a huge role to play in. I mean, that's why Gatland called you up essentially. Yeah. As captain of the fun squad.
Yeah. And
but that was instrumental, no doubt.
I trained hard. I was a professional. You know, I tried to play, and I had some good games on that thing. It's just the perfectionist in me. I never want to claim. You know, the best way is I talked about my psychologist is that you know when you don't get picked for a team in a game, and people ask you, fans come up and ask you.
Yeah.
A lot of time, you have to say, or if you lose a game, wow, you know, the thing was there was a couple of mistakes. The referee got in the way, and I was a little bit injured. And I was a little bit. It's way better just to go, yeah, fucking. We won, we did it, and there's no excuses. And it's the same way with the Lions thing. Like I will treasure that for personally forever, and I will absolutely love it. I just don't want to walk around saying that I'm a Lion because you know I didn't make it onto I didn't get a cap. And for a perfectionist like me, that's what matters. That won't detract from it being the best and most fun time of my life. And the very fact that you know if it wasn't through the misfortune of one of my really good mates, Billy. To get onto the tour, but I loved it, and I would put it up there as a great moment. But I've just locked it away into things that I, you know, I'm built like that, and I do have moments of like clarity where I look at it and go exactly what you said. Wow, what an amazing career, and how lucky I am for someone with my talent to be able to do what I've done. And I realise that, and I'm not trying to be a crash. And some people never get opportunity. It's just purely because. Of my always looking at the next thing, which is scary because there isn't the next thing except
there will be.
To Fiji in the summer. That's about it.
Well, they are. Do you do memorabilia and medals?
Yeah,
and a trophy cabinet. And
I don't have a cabinet. You know,
spike and a trainer.
You know,
on
what? I've never given away a playing shirt.
Have
actually,
you
not? That's bullshit. I've given away two playing shirts, one to Chloe. And one to...
I wouldn't say that's giving it that far. It's probably moved from the left side of the bedroom
to the right side
of the bedroom.
And one to Daniel Craig when he came into the change room and he just put it in, he stuffed it in a bag and walked off. It was a number 19 shirt, so I wasn't that bothered. But
did he steal it or you actually...
No, I gave it to him. I said, listen, I just wanted to, you know, because he came round and I'd been with him. I said, oh, this is a little gift, say thank you. And he's like, sweet, sweet, sweet. And he goes, I'll give it to my like dad. And I was like, well, I thought you were going to keep it. And then just... So that was a bit of a wound. But no, I've kept everything. I've got more kit than
have you picked up shirts along the way?
Yeah, I've picked up.
So you take but don't give. If you
Sorry. So for England, you get two shirts.
Yes, of course
so
you do.
I've swapped one.
Yes,
and I've kept one. But
right.
What I mean is I've never given it away to anyone else. Like I value them. Like it took me long enough and hard enough, and I know what I had to get through to get them. But I haven't just given them willy nilly. You know, like I'll always sign stuff for people. I won't give my playing shirts away.
And mate, so where are they? Got 78 around a room somewhere? You know,
I did say about doing that, but that was a bit too self-indulgent.
Lance Armstrong did his that rather controversial post. I want to see like a panoramic.
But I've kept most of my parents got most of it. I've got most of it. A lot of this stuff's just sat in boxes. I don't really display stuff. I had when I moved into my house, obviously, I got these big pictures put up, and they were all like kind of like Grand Slam pictures, England pictures, holiday pictures, or whatever. But I've never put any stuff on the wall. Oh, Wasp gifted me a shirt I've got on the. Which says once a wasp, always a wasp. But it works when I left the second time. The first time I left to go to Stanford on Saturday, that wasn't true. It's like once a wasp, always a wasp. Actually, we hate you. And then you come back, they're like, all is forgiven. I would definitely I want to put a Saints shirt up. Even, you know, I play five times, so I want to do it because I love that club. And, you know, I've got a Lions thing, but my parents have hung most of the stuff up. But I've got things in boxes like the Six Nations, the Lions. I kept it all.
Yeah.
But I've never displayed it.
Should we talk about what's next?
Yeah, can do.
We'll build this out a little bit, obviously. HOR. But it's interesting that, I can empathise, actually, because I had a sort of similar thing about 6 months ago. But you sort of look at the abyss and you're like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You are the busiest player I know. And I'm just sort of interested in what you'd like to do. Are you going to take a bit of time and consider, or are you somebody who needs to get straight into it? Do you want to do business? Do you want to do?
Do you know what the scary thing is?
Speaking, media.
I've been fully institutionalised since the age of 8.
Yeah.
I went to Papwick boarding school, then did Wellington, and then I went straight into professional rugby.
Yeah.
And I've been around, you know, for 20 odd seasons or 20 odd years. Where I've been around, 40 lads, I've been all male environment school, which probably explains where I am. And. You know, around lads, and that's the biggest thing I'm going to miss. You know, the biggest thing I'm going to miss about rugby, and the next thing is coming into a changing room and seeing someone and hearing the gossip, and someone's got a shit haircut, someone's worn some terrible shoes, or someone's had a funny story, or someone's embarrassed themselves, and just sharing stories and sitting around and laughing and working hard with people. You know, like...
I was going to say, tins and I give you shit haircuts shoes, so you can get about 5 minutes value out of that.
It's people don't really understand, and if you go to any public gym, people think they work hard, but they don't work hard. Mm. You know, like, you obviously get people who push themselves, but people don't really know what it's like to actually train and to go through kind of pre-season, to go through hell. Like, you know, that remember that pre-season for the World Cup 2015 in Denver was the hardest I've ever worked in my entire life. It was horrific. Altitude running, you know, doing all this mass running, and then we do mass running and then try to do some plays under fatigue. I think the lads are still trying to finish the playoff now. Do you know what I mean? We never did it. It was like probably a premonition of what was going to happen in the World Cup. Honestly, we worked like machines. So I think for me, structure is going to be a massive thing next. You know,
You want something that gives you a routine?
Well, I think I'm going to create my own routine. I think that's really important for me. I think, you know, wake up, train. I want to keep training. I want to get into shape. I want to take up jiu-jitsu. I think I'm going to need that competitive element of it and try to learn to do it.
Do you need a toe for that, or can you kind of?
No. I think my toe will be. I think it will. You know, will calm down, and you know, eventually, I think there are things you can do and stuff. So, but it's the running that you just have to run a lot in jiu-jitsu. You just have to get lay on your back and get choked out. Right. And then, you know, I like to do kind of MMA stuff, like not to competitively, but obviously just to learn it and stay fitness, and then try to get in great shape. And then off the back of that, you know, I'm loving the DJ and stuff. You know, that for me is a massive hobby of mine. I know people kind of laugh, but I take it genuinely serious, and I've applied the same, everything I do, I applied the same mentality. You know, every time we've done dinners or bits and stuff together, I'm always speaking to you for feedback, and I apply the same, and it doesn't always work on creative things like music, but try to apply the same mentality to it. You know, how much extra work can I do? Who can I go and see to help me? How can I do it? Because I'd love to, you know, do two or three of those gigs a month, and I want to do a lot more motivational speaking and stuff, and corporate speaking. You know, that I really enjoy that performance element. I think if I went into an office, it wouldn't be long before I was jumping out the top window, I think, because I'm just not built like that.
Throwing others out.
I'm just not built like that. I'm obviously a performer. Like, there's no getting away from it.
Yeah.
So I want to do those kind of things, and I'd love to get into presenting and kind of TV. I tell you, I was very lucky to know a guy called Tom Davies, the comedian.
Oh, yeah.
He's brilliant, and he's massive as well, so he does a lot of funny things.
He does the police, the improvised, what's it called?
I know what you're talking about.
It's brilliant, I know exactly.
He was in Plebs as well, you know, yes. what do you call him, Davies?
Murder in Smallsville?
Yeah, Murder in Smallsville, yeah. So I'd love to do things like that, you know, get involved. Because, you know, he's a big unit, he's bigger than me. Because I was concerned that, acting ability aside, that I'd always just be like Doorman number five or Thug number six. But I'd love to do those things. I need to have... That's what I'm passionate about, those areas. I'm not passionate about working in the city. I remember some guy I met at a dinner emailed me afterwards. It was like some Goldman Sachs and offered me this stuff. And I was like, mate, I didn't tell you. I really appreciate this, but I fucking do not want to work in a thing.
You want to keep playing?
In whatever
in
capacity.
Life.
Yeah, in life. And it is exciting. I will, for the summer, I'm going to enjoy my summer.
Yeah.
It's going to be odd not coming back and making like decisions of that. You know, do you know what I'm excited to do? If I get a cold, I can fucking take some cough mixture. That's like a big bonus for me.
You can't do that because
of testing. I'm interested, you know, I can take some supplements that, not illegal supplements, but like normal supplements.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Come back like the Rock.
I could join you on that, actually.
We'll get you on the
put
program.
Some weight on
but
the coat hanger.
It's just bizarre little things like that that sound, you know, it's stupid that if I want to go for away for a weekend, I can. Do you know what? I can plan my weekends.
Yeah.
I can. If Chloe, she's the most organised pain in the ass in the world. She asked me about something like, Chloe, I haven't got my timetable. Because when I was at WASS, they used to give it to you 2 weeks in advance or 1 week in advance. You'd never be able to book anything. At Saints, it was brilliant. The first day I got back, they got there, they like sent me a month planner. Mm. And I was like, this is a revelation. So I'm excited to do those kind of things. But you know, it's interesting.
I think you'll end up loving it a lot more than you think you will right now. Are you nervous about it? Frightened about it? Scared about it? Or are you kind of coming around to it?
I am scared about it. I think, look, I've had so much fun in my career and I've had so much thing. And you know, there's always that nice certainty of knowing you're getting paid, you know, that you've got a contract, albeit always having short contracts. But I don't have that. And everything else is, you know, I'm obviously a workaholic. There's no getting away for that, but it's just it is scary. I don't know, you know. The best analogy I can give you, and this happens to everybody, but it's my fear is that my dad, when I was younger, we went to a party with some friends, and there was an ex-England rugby player there, and I can't remember who it was. And my dad said, introduced me, and I shook his hand, I was like, hello, sir. And you know, he was like, I can't believe you're not more excited. That's so and so, you know, he's played 60 times for England. I was like, Dad, I literally have no idea who that is. And within a year's time, I'm going to be exactly that guy, and some kid's going to... And it's just that whole thing of just disappearing.
When the cheering stops,
just fading into nothing.
I mean, are there people to talk to about that? Well, we've discussed it with Tins before, and he obviously gets cheered in a different way, with a royal wave, rather than... are there people to sort of help with that?
I mean, I think you've got to actively go and look at it. Like, I you know, I obviously talked to my psychologist. It's said about performance. It's going to be about dealing with this kind of stuff. I'm excited about life because I've made... I've made a lot of good friends along the way, and I now get to socialise. I've prioritised throughout my life my job.
Yeah.
So for all the things that people think I'm like a party guy, go out, I'm complete opposite. I'm pretty much a loner, and I don't see anyone. But I'm looking forward to going to these places, and you know, going back and you know, and going to WASS and going to watch a Saints game, and seeing, you know, seeing like Dai Young, who was you know, was great for me at WASS, and all these kind of people, and just be in a completely different context, and also not have a boss. You know, like I've always had a boss.
I think Chloe.
Well, Chloe is the boss. Yeah, Chloe is the boss. But just, it is for once, you know, so much stuff in my career. I said on one of the podcasts, I haven't always been able to say what I wanted to say. I've never been able to do what I want to do because you've always got someone who's...
Stand well back, everybody.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that. I think there is... I know a lot of ex-players who want to go into the media, go and throw people under the bus and become controversial for the sake of being controversial. I'll never do that. I'll have an opinion and I'll give it and I'll do it with the understanding that, you know, no one wants to get mugged off, because I've been mugged off more times than anyone else.
Yeah. I read an article about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, and it was to do with Cristiano Ronaldo, and the journalist said something along the lines of, savour him, because whether you love him or don't, when he's gone, we'll all miss him.
Mm.
I'm not going to compare you directly to Ronaldo.
Right, thank God for that,
you wrestle with him. But I do think the game genuinely will miss you when you're gone. Not gone too far, but you know exactly what I mean. How would you like to be remembered by the people out there player?
I'd like to be remembered as someone who was physical, someone who always gave 100% and really cared about what they did, but was someone off the field who was like a good team man, like a good guy that was kind of was as professional as anyone could be, but also showed that, you know what, you can have a personality, you can be fun, life is meant to be enjoyed, and that you can, you know, you can be a complete tit before you turn across the whitewash. But as soon as you cross the whitewash, you can be ultra professional. And I want people to, I just wanted to have had respect to my teammates. You know, I have been in the kind of enviable, non-enviable situation of, because I give so much people shit and always been out there, you know, compliments are few and far between. And but mainly because people assume you already think you're the dog's bollocks. Yeah. Or people don't want to say it because it's easier to get into them because you've been getting into them. But then you hear your teammates and people say things to you offhand and you're like, oh my God, you did think I was a good player. You did respect me. And I just want to have that. I want people to remember that I was fun and entertaining and that I tried my best on the field and that they respected me for what I did. Because of all the doubt I had in myself, that wasn't always clear, you know. But for guys who've turned around and said to me after things going, fuck, you did really well there, you played well, well done. It's always for me a bit like, oh.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a shock. And, you know, even when I watch highlights of myself play, it's a shock to me that I did it. And that just shows the mental side of it that I wasn't probably, it shouldn't be a surprise. If you back yourself, you shouldn't surprise yourself. But I watched it, fucking hell, I actually did it right then. Yeah. I did it right. And that's, you know, that'd be interesting. But I just want people to have respected me and to enjoy my company and laugh and say that I was a good man, you know, for what? Because so many times I've come to clubs and I've seen people have a bit of trepidation, seen people think, oh, he's going to be a dickhead. I've seen him do this and this. And then you see them like warm and a bit self-deprecating, and they're like, oh my God. And then I end up getting on with them like a house on fire. And that's all I want, is the people who knew me to be, you know, respectful and be happy. And because I, you know, I've loved every single minute of every club I've been to, and every single club has been an insane adventure. And I won't give it all away because I'm going to write an autobiography. So, you know, I'll tell it all in there.
You know, you become a much better player when you retire, don't you? There'll be a lot of people. It will be really interesting. There'll be a lot of people who put, I hope, will put down a lot of love in the, yeah, in the.
I mean, I think the most important thing is yeah, the most important thing is you in all ways in life is that I worried about what my coach said. I never worried about what the media said, because I told you, you know, I've watched half of them score games and they've submitted them by half time and they were on their laptop the whole time writing the text. I watched a game of 30 minutes. They'd very, very little. So I never qualified my performances on them, however much I'd like to think they did. I just want my teammates to be happy. If my coach is happy, my teammates respect me. That's all that mattered. No one else's opinion mattered. And you know, I always want to make your dad proud. Mm. You know, and he was one of my harshest critics. He was always, you know, and I think that, you know, cup half empty in those respects, because he wanted me to do well. My mum, I loved and was always so complimentary, but I'm not sure she still knows what was going on. So you know, but she, you know, but she was brilliant. She'd crawl over, you know, broken glass and hot coals just to support and help me. So I'm sport with that. And Chloe, you know, she didn't give a shit about rugby, had no idea who I was, had no interest in me. And she's become a rugby keen off the back of it and knows things just so she can, when we have a conversation post-game, oh, I didn't think my tackling was great. I didn't think, so she can say, actually, look, I thought you did really well there, but you didn't do that, without me volunteering it. Some players' girlfriends are like die hard. They cry when they don't get into England. They cry when stuff, they go mad. That's the worst case scenario.
She would pull the perspective.
Chloe would give me the perspective if I asked for it. And that's nice. And she always helped me celebrate the moments I wouldn't celebrate. Because I'd come off a field, got man of the match, or we won something, and I'd be like, oh, I didn't think I did that. I didn't tackle that well. I missed that. I wanted to go lower. And she'd be like, grab me by the thing and say, like, you fucking just played well and just won. Have a whiskey. Have a pizza. Like, fucking cheer up. Smile. And I'd be like, and that's what it's been like my whole... And without her, it was similar, but I had no one telling me the other bit. I would just go off and go and work on it and do, like, you know, training the next day, or doing reverse treadmill running on a weird place in Chiswick, like with an anchor on me, and doing like, oh mate, the stuff I've done. I mean, bar Reiki crystals or seeing witch doctors, there isn't anything I haven't done to try to be a better rugby player, which is funny. I remember I got contacted Zin Zambrook once to get him to come and help me do number eight stuff. And I mean, it wasn't long ago, like, even last season, I was texting George Smith to get some help. And I remember I got to know Rich McCaw quite well, and I'd email him occasionally, we'd have a conversation, and I used to ask him for some breakdown tips and help, always trying to help. He always ignored those emails as if I never sent them.
There's a surprise.
Yeah, never wanting to help the competition.
Holding on to his IP.
Yeah, so.
Whiskey and pizza in phase two. Do you know, I'm really disappointed I haven't made you cry.
Just I know. I did almost go at the start, but I got it all out.
You wobbled but recovered.
Yeah, you know, Chloe said...
I wanted snot and tears.
Chloe said that she... We might have to contact the laboratory to show that I actually do have some emotion after I cried. That he can cry. But I've told everyone this, that I cried. And she's like, she came up to the other day, she went, are you going to keep telling everyone that you cried just to show? And I was like, well, it's an emotional moment, Chloe. Keep milking it.
I hope that you will very quickly reach a point where you look back with enormous pride. I really do. And I echo what I said earlier, which is I think the game is going to be certainly less colourful and a lot quieter without you. But we're going to have some fun, House of Rugby or forwards.
Yeah, listen, House of Rugby or whatever we do, I'm really excited. I am excited about the kind of next chapter. I'm scared as shitless, but
you'll be all right.
I can always guarantee that I will workaholic, I'll give it 100%, I'll probably put my foot in my mouth and I'll have an opinion, I'll be gobby and I'll try to make everyone laugh. That's the remit while trying to earn some cash while I'm doing it. Because cash is king.
Cash is king. I've enjoyed parking the journalism. I've enjoyed having a chinwag. Should we have a little hug? Because that was quite emotional. Well, love it. I know people will sort of, you know, there'll be people who say, oh, it wasn't a grilling and it wasn't,
a grilling? Well, what
parking
do you
mean? I know, but you know what I mean. They're always doubters. You're going to be all right.
Thanks, mate.
You'll be all right.
Thank you.
That is it for this week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening to the House of Rugby. We will be back to normal next week, I promise you. You'll be shooting from the hip, shooting from the lip, as always. I think it's fair to say that he faced it all. He did stand tall, and he certainly did it his way. Well done, the Hask.
Thanks, Myron.
Phase 2. We'll be all right.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.